Can you talk a bit about unattached love for pets, people such as parents, children, partners, and how not to be aloof, dispassionate, ambivalent, and distant, guarded in non-attachment? Okay. Actually, I have the opposite problem. I tend to get too empathetic, and the aloofness is the hard part I have. So, good question. Can you talk a bit about unattached love for pets, people such as parents, children, partners, and how not to be aloof, dispassionate, ambivalent, and distant in non-attachment? Well, you have to have a glass of water. Well, I think we're all different in the degrees of equanimity and empathy we have. So say if I just think of the people I know in my communities I've lived in, some can be very equanimous and friendly, but not feel tremendous empathy for other people's suffering. Others can, that's one extreme, and they're still friendly, but somehow other people's suffering seems to, well, that's kind of their problem. And then another extreme would be people who feel a tremendous amount of empathy for other people's suffering, but tend to get overwhelmed by it. Don't know boundaries. So we all, whatever the case may be, in different, we all have a different way we have different capacities, different equipment, the way we relate. So in some sense we have to understand that, so there's no one answer to these things. Non-attachment or non-clinging is it's a specifically technical term upadana is the Pali word for attachment, and it specifically refers to attachment to craving. So you have to sort of understand the whole teaching around the Four Noble Truths to get a feeling for what that word means. Now in common English or Western parlance, non-attachment might actually mean being very cold. So that the common, just like the word karma now, tends to mean destiny, whereas in the Pali it actually means volition. So you have to be careful of popular usage of a word like non-attachment or karma and what it actually means in the Pali tradition. So in the Pali tradition it's specifically points to the law of causality, and in that law of causality, when there is craving, when there's some kind of wanting, and that's attached to, then there's suffering. So you have to go back to wanting. What do we mean by that? And the wanting, and most of you know that teaching, the Pali word is tanha, craving, yeah. You've seen, it's good to study that one. And that has a specific meaning. It doesn't mean all desire. So desire, it's a specific type of desire. And it's this desire for, you could say it's desire for sensual pleasure as opposed to sensual displeasure. That's called kama tanha. Right? So that's one type. So the extreme of that would be hedonism, or the inability to be with discomfort. So when I feel discomfort and I just can't be with that, there's the craving for the pleasant bodily sensation. I attach to that craving for bodily sensation by thinking, I've got to move, I've got to get out of here, I can't take this anymore. I'm getting out of retreat. That would be attachment to that. So my thigh starts to hurt, there's 20 minutes left in the sitting, the craving, this is sense craving, kama tanha, okay, comes into consciousness. I don't want this. And that's natural. Nothing wrong with that. And I can move if I want, but through experience, maybe, through experience I know that if I just shift on every discomfort, I'm going to get restless. So through experience I know, well, it's all right, I'll just be patient with that. And maybe I'm patient with that, and maybe I move a bit, but I don't attach to the craving. In other words, I don't get wrapped up into it, I don't start to think through it. And that craving ceases, and the mind has peace. So that's what we mean by non-attachment to sense craving. Okay? So it's not, it hasn't, it is, it's a word in a specific structure in the Pali. It's one type of craving, kama tanha. Bhava tanha is the craving to become, and vibhava tanha is the craving to get rid of. And that has more to do with the sense of self, with ego. So the craving to become might be like if we're talking about monastics, we're all trying to get enlightened maybe, and so maybe I'm sitting here and I'm trying to get some kind of insight. So that's me trying to go somewhere into the future to get the insight which I've always read about and dreamed about and hoped about. And if I don't see that in the mind, then I start acting in that way, I start practicing in that way, and there's a tension in me. If I see that craving to get some kind of a result in the future, me becoming, and I don't attach to that, I relax, my mind comes back to peace. So that's bhava tanha, this whole sense of becoming. Then vibhava tanha is the craving to get rid of. So maybe I feel annoyance at something, and that annoyance comes up, and I just try to get rid of it by watching the breath. I shouldn't be annoyed. I should be compassionate. That kind of should be that comes on. So I don't notice the craving to get to become something else, the repressive kind of craving. I attach to that or get involved in that, or my mind believes in that, and there's suffering again. So that's the way the word attachment is used, right? So in terms of this question, how not to be aloof, dispassionate, ambivalent, and distant in non-attachment. Non-attachment does not imply that the heart's not open. That I would see as being a misunderstanding of what the word actually is pointing to in the Pali. It might point to that in common language. So it seems to me when one isn't preoccupied with sense craving, when one isn't preoccupied with me trying to become something in the future, and when I'm not preoccupied with repressing things, then actually, because I'm not preoccupied, I'm available. And if there is sensitivity to the heart, then that availability arises as compassion or joy, depending on the situation. And it seems to me when I'm preoccupied with my own pleasures and becomings and so on, that the heart closes down. Sometimes I need to be preoccupied, I'm just exhausted or whatever, but as long as I'm preoccupied, I'm not available. So, like let's say with my mother, non-attachment, because I'm watching this a lot, I talk about this a lot, compassion and equanimity. So equanimity is more a word we use in terms of the heart rather than non-attachment. So equanimity is a peaceful state of mind, but it's an open-hearted state of mind, state of peacefulness. And that is very hard to do if you're very close to someone. So it's very hard for me to stay peaceful with my mother's osteoporosis and arthritis and headaches and all the rest of it. So there's the open-heartedness. So non-attachment would be not attaching to the desire that she not have pain. That's the problem for me. The problem is that I don't want her to suffer. So there's a craving there. The craving is I don't like to see my mother suffer. It's something that hurts me and it inflicts on me. I don't want that pain. So if I'm not aware of that not wanting, that particular kind of wanting, and I attach to that, then I get tense. And then I get tense, and then that's suffering. But letting go of that wanting doesn't mean that I've become a kind of a cold-hearted, indifferent chap. On the contrary, it actually means that I'm really more in touch with her needs. I'm not caught up with my own needs, which are that she doesn't suffer. Now that is very, for me that's hard to do because I'm so connected to her, and how could it be otherwise? To say it should be otherwise would be a cruelty, wouldn't it? So then that's what I have to practice with. So the non-attachment isn't in a loving relationship with someone. It's in the types of craving that come up into my heart. And why do I suffer? So that's why in Buddhist practice we talk about suffering, cause, the cessation of suffering, and the path which leads to the cessation of suffering. Suffering has to be understood. So I'm there with my mom, and I feel the suffering. Where do I go? I go to my body. I feel the contraction. So if a person who is very, very open to, with a tremendous amount of empathy for animal life and really feels for the suffering of animal life or human life overly much, because if you really contemplate the suffering in Darfur and you keep thinking about it and you keep thinking about it, then your mind just gets exhausted because it's too much wrapped up in other beings suffering. So that kind of a person sometimes thinks, well, I have to be non-attached. Well, it's not so much that. It's more like, what can I do? How much can I do? And how much am I just too much involved with the world of suffering? And where do I need to find equanimity? So again, just as a small example, with my mother, I said, well, how much can I do? And how much is just what she has to do for her own? How much work does she have to do? How much suffering does she have to endure? So there's a certain amount I can do, but when I step over those boundaries, then I'm lifting up something I can't really lift up because it's not part of my power. I don't have the power to help there. And that's I think we all, we're going to struggle with that one. How to keep the heart open, how not to get burnt out. And again, I use the body. I can see when I'm overextended with empathy, the body's not settled in the heart. I'm kind of reaching out too much. But if I stay with the body and then I notice how I don't want others to suffer, and I'm always trying to fix it, which is one of my problems, I notice the tension, and I can keep training in that. It really does depend on one's own and personal way one handles that. The relationships we have with children or grandchildren or parents or partners, husband, wife, they're very powerful. You can't just say, well, just don't be attached. Life isn't that way. They're very, very powerful. But they are very, very powerful fields to work in, I think, because we are affected so deeply. And we are affected so deeply because we care so deeply. And because we care so deeply, we can really contemplate what a deep affection for someone is, a deep love for someone is, and then the suffering of that, and how do you find freedom within that? You think, well, I'll never have that, I'll never relate in a loving way with everyone. Well, I don't think that would be on. That would be running away from life. So contemplate what that word non-attachment might mean in common language and what it means in the specific Pali context. When sweeping the body, some teachers suggest not holding one's attention on a strong, obvious sensation any longer than anywhere else because it will limit your ability to fear more subtle sensations. What is your take on this matter? Is there value in staying with a strong sensation for 20 or 30 minutes? I've never heard that one. I just kind of experiment. So, like if I I don't so much now, but before when I suffered a lot from anxiety, I just stayed with my guts until the anxiety left. Just stayed with, didn't let it go to my head. So now if anxiety comes up, I just know where to go. So that's a very strong feeling, but by staying with the, where the knot is, as it were, the energy knot, and not taking it to thought, I might, you know, have to stay there for a while. I'm not quite sure where that instruction comes from. But when all else fails, experiment. Try it. See if it works or not. What is the difference between working with pain in the body that, for example, causes restlessness and being averse to that pain and wanting to get rid of it? Yeah, well, pain is to be gotten rid of, isn't it? That's why it's there. And it's teaching us to move. So pain is a very important part of our... If we didn't have pain... I remember Life magazine had this, way back, a picture of a kid who didn't have pain. Can you imagine? His mother always was checking him. Has he burnt himself? Has he broken his leg? Story, you know, it'd be nice not to have pain. So pain is a natural part of our good health to some extent. But when it reaches like something like my mother's situation now, she has a lot of pain. Osteoporosis, arthritis, you know, there's just degrees of pain now. There isn't a pain-free day for her. So there you can't get rid of it. She takes lots of medicine, and I'm contemplating morph now, seriously, somehow helping her, maybe the pain patch or whatever. So we're doing all of that one has to do with pain. But there is pain, which is a natural function of the body, which teaches us to move and shift, but there's also the pain, which is a natural part of birth. And learning how to be at peace with pain is obviously a very important part of being in a human body. As we get older, we're going to feel more pain. We're not going to feel less pain. So the question is, when, you know, how much can you move on pain, and how much do you have to learn how to peacefully coexist with pain? So in a retreat, then, we do have an opportunity to see and investigate pains which are not going to hurt you. So that's important. Like if you're really going to mess up your sacroiliac or the cartilage in your knees, then you move. Don't hurt yourself. Don't damage yourself. But as I was saying, just the discomfort of the body, because the body can be a very uncomfortable realm, especially as you get older. So you do yoga, you do Tai Chi, you do all those things the best you can, and end up like Wanda Scaravellia. Have you ever seen pictures of that? She practiced with Krishnamurti and Iyengar and people like that. She was a Italian aristocrat, and I think at 85 she's just this absolute pretzel. And she's just this, and she and her, you know, wonderful kind of relationship to her physicality, but. So there are things we do to take care of the body. Having said all of that, we still, most of us, tend to have a fair bit of pain. So then, how can if you go back to craving, because it's the same pattern, there is discomfort. Start with something like discomfort, and just see how when discomfort arises, there's the desire to get rid of it, right? Natural, and there's the desire to have the pleasant. So then that's where the tension arises, and that's what one has to learn about. So what is the difference between the sensation of pain and the desire to get rid of it? Where's the difference? Can I notice the difference? Because the desire to get rid of it is not the pain itself. The pain itself is a sensation, and with the arising of that sensation, with the contact of that, There's the kama tanha, craving to get rid of. And if I choose then to stay with it, then if I go to the body and there's a lot of craving, what I find is my body starts to get tight. My shoulders get tight, my head gets tight, you know, wherever the pain is, that starts to get tight. So the arising of craving is also like this desire not to have that, and there's a kind of tightness. So if one learns to go to the discomfort and just try to really touch the sensation and maybe move away from it, what does it feel like above it? Where is the limit of it? What is it like as an energy? And then just to learn to not go to the thoughts about it, not to the reactions, just the pure sensation. And then put in words or send like loving kindness to it, to send relaxing energy, to breathe into it. These are the different kind of things we do with pain. But I think it is very important to learn to be with, obviously, it's very important to be with pain. Emotional pain as well as physical pain. So on this retreat, let's say you're first of all, let's say you sat the last sitting, right, and you had a really tough last 15 minutes, right, and the bell rang. Oh, just this incredible relief! I can move now. Then the next sitting, you'll probably be thinking, oh God. I hope he gives a talk after half an hour. So your mind's going to start to anticipate pain. So, what does that feel like? Because that's what you're doing, moment by moment awareness. Because if you're not aware of the anticipation of pain, then sure enough, maybe 20 minutes into the sitting, oh no. Because the anticipation is probably already building tension in your body. In the Mr. Goenka's retreats, they have these what they call maximum determinations. This thing, you will not move for 1 hour. I just used to get tense. It's kind of already I get tense. So the anticipation of pain. Okay, when the pain first arises in the body, even if it's after 5 minutes. Oh no, 5 minutes. It's already there. Then look how that creates a future. How am I going to make it for another 55 minutes? So you create a sense of self and time, and then that's the restlessness, the worry. Huh? And then if you attach to that, of course, then that sort of intensifies the whole pain. So if you can see the arising of anxiety, anticipation, pain, and then make a choice if you want to move, then just move really slowly. Don't be forceful in some kind of cruel way. So if you choose to move, then see, maybe that's actually better. So just shift your body a little bit to get out of the pain. If it's really bad and you want to stand up in a sitting, fine. If you want to move to a seat, fine. If you want to leave the room, fine. If you want to leave retreat, well, come back. but give yourself permission to do what you have to do to care for the body so you're not hurting the body. Then having done that, then make your experiment. So if after 5 minutes you shift a bit and actually, well, that was all right and it worked, so you know. Or if you shift a bit and it's just out of a kind of reaction and then you feel that again, oh, that's not working. So that you understand what is good for your body and how much you can take and how much you can't take, rather than just being blind about it. Now, having said that, when one can, what often happens with in meditation, the discomforts we have around the body, when discomfort arises, a lot of craving arises with it, obviously. And it's quite interesting, when that craving arises, and you can just witness to craving, you can just be aware of the craving for pleasure, and you just take the displeasure, again, not in a way to hurt yourself. Over that half hour of sitting with that, it might be quite difficult. Obviously, it takes a lot of patience, a lot of kindness, a lot of just encouragement, kind of right coaching. Then through that, you come out of the sitting quite often, feel very peaceful. Because why? Because one has abandoned craving. one has let go of the craving that's coming to consciousness, and one has been able to be with the unpleasant. If, however, one is, you've just sort of held on, you know, out of a willfulness, you'll never want to sit again. So you don't want to just kind of, because most of us have probably tried that when we first started meditation, just, you know, grinning and bearing it, or not grinning and bearing it, gnashing one's teeth, and that doesn't work, because that's the application of blind willpower rather than wisdom. If I can learn lessons about how to be with pain, then when my arthritis comes, or whatever, then there's more chance that I've understood how to be with the discomfort of the body. Yet it's very, very natural. Keeps you awake. Two meditators came out of I was on a Goenka retreat, and they were talking at the end of the retreat, and kind of comparing notes. And, you know, I had a lot of pain. You had pain. I had sleepiness. You're really lucky. You had pain. It does sharpen the mind. Okay, so we still have half hour tea time. If you want to sit, walk, whatever, and then we'd be back at 7 o'clock.